is wrong. Verse number 12. When the righteous triumphs, there is great glory. But when the wicked rise, men hide themselves. Now, the difference between righteous and wickedness is as vast as day and night. I mean, they are worlds apart between wickedness and righteousness. And both recognize, even wicked people recognize righteous people. And even righteous people recognize wicked people. And you need to understand that. In fact, it's very interesting how, and some of our ladies in here who are in the front office, how wicked people can come into our office and you can tell they are wicked as they're coming through and they've got attitudes and everything. And by the time, as soon as they meet the staff, as soon as they get in with Deborah or with Sally or with me, this reverence comes over almost all of them. The reverence. And they leave with reverence. That doesn't mean they're happy with us. But what I believe that is when they're in the presence of a person who has the Holy Spirit living inside of them, the Holy Spirit even changes their lives while they are there. And that's true. Isn't it true? You've seen it. Both of y'all have seen it. They're there. All right. Well, whenever righteousness is around, righteous triumphs. Now, there are some terrible acts that happen where righteous people die. But sometimes righteous people die so other righteous people will rise up, okay, to fight against wickedness. But when the wicked rise up, righteous people will go and hide. They will hide for a period and for a time sometimes. Verse 13, he who conceals his transgressions will not prosper. Concealed your transgressions. That's a word for sin. Where you transgress somebody else's property. You transgress somebody else's things. You steal from them. You do something. Some sort of sin that you do. As long as you're the only one who knows about that sin and you keep it quiet, you're not going to prosper because you're going to probably continue to do those sins. Probably. Now, all of us have a sin. Every one of us. I don't care. You can be set. You're saved. But you still have something that you have to keep in check every day. It is something the way you think. And you know it's wrong. You knew it was wrong before you were saved when you were doing it. And you know it now that it's wrong. And it still kind of haunts you. Just like Paul in chapter 7 of the book of Romans talks about that little thing that just haunted him. That thing where he says, I do what I do not want to do. I do what I know I should not do. And though I do not want to do it, it still overcomes me and I do. And he's a saved guy. He's writing letters for the church. He's setting the organization of the church up for the Lord. And he is an incredible witness for the Lord. But yet he's got something in his life that he has to keep in check every day to make sure. And if you keep it quiet, you know about it. You think nobody else knows about it, but God knows about it. Okay. Look, he who conceals his transgression will not prosper. But he who confesses and forsakes them will find compassion. How blessed is the man who fears always, but he who hardens his heart will fall into calamity. The sinner who knows he's a sinner and who continues to sin is wrong, and he must make a decision to change. And one way he makes that decision to change is he lets the cat out of the bag of what his sin is so that other people will hold him accountable for this. In most of the Proverbs, the Hebrew word for fears means to have reverence or worship. But here, it means to be afraid. It's a different word. It means to be afraid. Here, he says he fears it because he's afraid of it. Once a sin is exposed, if the sinner hardens his heart, great trouble will come to him. Sin unconfessed is difficult to be forsaken or put away. But once it is confessed and once it is forsaken, once you turn your back on that sin and not allow it to rule over you, compassion does come your way. But if you continue to do that sin, sin will bring judgment to you. Verse 15. Like a roaring lion and a rushing bear is a wicked ruler over a poor people. A leader who is a great oppressor lacks understanding, but he who hates unjust gain will prolong his days. Wicked leaders are no different from raging animals. Raging animals. Now, I've seen raging animals before, and I've been fearful. But what's the most interesting thing is I had a dog by the name of Freckles back at 104 Legion Street when I was a kid. I was in the eighth grade. I could hold Freckles by his tail and carry him around. He was a little bitty dog, Freckles. You know why I called him Freckles? Because he had looked like he had freckles. I could hold him by his ears. He'd come here. I could hold him in my arms. He'd run to me and jump into my arms. And even though I wasn't hurting him or anything, you know, I could hold him upside down with both paws and two hands and carry him around upside down, and almost like he was just smiling, you know. And we would show, and he'd jump backwards for me. And, you know, I could say, I was a great dog, the best dog I've ever had that trained that dog. But that dog at Freckles got into a bad habit. Somewhere about the fourth year of his life, he began chasing tires. Tires that were still rolling. And one day, a car came by, and it was wet. And Freckles chased after that car tire. And I was out, and I saw it. And Freckles went to slow down, but he couldn't slow down because the pavement was wet. And that Freckles, his little rear end slid around, and the car ran over his rear end. Boom, boom. I ran out there. I picked up Freckles. Well, I picked up Freckles too fast, because as soon as I picked up Freckles, Freckles' teeth started biting in pain. Got me across my face. I still have scars today. I've got scars on my neck from it. I've got scars down my shoulders. I've got scars on my arms before I dropped Freckles in the street. And I walked away from Freckles. Actually, I think I ran away from Freckles. Freckles was a raging animal. No compassion. Could not hold that dog. And I looked as I saw that dog with the front two paws pulled itself off of that street and over underneath a little bitty bush, where finally the caretaker, the authorities came and took Freckles away. And they actually had to shoot her with a dart with something to get her to calm down so they could get her and take her away. I never saw her again. I understand a raging animal. I understand also one time I was out in the woods up in Colorado with a friend, and we turned around and we heard this noise, and this old bear was coming through and coming towards us. And my friend had a 38 short pistol, and my friend emptied every bullet into that bear as that bear was charging after us, coming towards us. I was so scared, my feet were like they were in cement. I couldn't move. I couldn't holler. I couldn't do anything. I was just scared to death. And my friend emptied that thing, and the bear ran around from us and just kept on going and then laid down and died. I understand fear. I understand fear. I understand a raging animal. But I'm telling you, Solomon is right in this when he says that a roaring lion and a Russian bear is like wicked rulers over their people. They go after them. And the leaders, they bring this great oppression down. Their attitude shows that they lack understanding. But when you have a righteous leader, that righteous leader will not do the same type of things that a wicked leader will do. Wicked leaders will continue to lie to you as if it's the truth. And they have said it so many times, they believe it's the truth. And all the rest of the people know it's not the truth. Almost all the people know it's not the truth. Some of the youngsters who are just going to college know no different, who are sitting under professors who have never worked in the real world. They went to high school, then they went to college. They got their master's, they got their PhDs, and they started talking. They started teaching, and they're just now hitting 27, 28, 30, and they're teaching what they learned from young professors that never worked in the real world. And so we have these colleges where everything's in the education field and it's not the real world. Some of those folks don't know reality. They don't know reality. They've got their pie in the sky about how things ought to be, and how things, we ought to do the Robin Hood thing. We ought to give, steal from the rich and give to the poor. I had one in my office this week, and we were talking about that, and I asked her, I said, you think we ought to steal from the rich and give to the poor? She said, no, we're not going to steal, but they just ought to pay a whole lot more taxes. I said, okay, more taxes than the poor people do? She said, yeah, so the poor people don't have to pay taxes. And I said, poor people don't pay taxes. She said, well, you know, so that they can have more money for education, you know. And I said, okay, you realize all of our money goes to the state and comes back to us. And the one reason why we have truant officers to make sure that we count the heads at 8 o'clock every morning is because every head is an amount of money that comes us to help run the budget to run our schools so we can pay our teachers and we keep the lights on and we can buy the books and we can buy all that and keep the electricity going. She said, yeah, and they're just so greedy about that. They want to count every head so they can get every penny they can get. I went, what? She said, you know, we ought to have an income state a tax instead of a property tax. And I said, wait a minute. I said, okay, which would you rather have, property tax or income tax? I said, state of Oklahoma has income tax, very little property tax. State of Texas has property tax with no payroll tax. She said, well, which one do you think's better? I said, well, let me ask you this. We know exactly how many square feet there are in Texas. And we know exactly how much we're taxing every square feet. So within parameters, we know every year how much money's coming in from taxes. Oh, okay, so let's go to Oklahoma, where the taxes are just on payroll. Taxes on payroll. But this year, Halliburton let off 28,000 people, and Chesapeake Oil let off 14,000 people. So how many is that? 28 and 14. How much is that? She tells me what the number is. Okay. That number of people, all those thousands are now out of the workforce, and so there's no tax coming in on the amount of money that they make. So the state of Oklahoma is suffering because they don't have enough money coming in, because they don't have enough salaries coming in. Which do you think is better? The one where we know how much money is coming in, or the one it's like rolling the dice every year, see how many people are working to the money coming in? I said, besides that, Houston has 4.4 million people inside of its city limits, and the state of Oklahoma has 2.7 million in the entire state. You know, everybody in Oklahoma almost is just a little more than half of what's just in the city limits of Houston. Forget that. City limits of Houston has other suburbs around it and other cities that have a whole lot more. Which would you rather? She was dumbfounded. Just dumbfounded. She said, my professors in economics never told me anything about that. I said, because they don't know. They do not. They've not worked in the real world. Leaders who are oppressive will be oppressive because they think their way is right. And they're going to tell you it's right whether it's right or not. A lie told 100,000 times doesn't mean that it's going to be true. I should not be on my high horses today, but I am. Verse number 17. A man who is laden with the guilt of human blood will be a fugitive until death. Let no one support him. Listen, that was the law back then. Let's pull something for today from this. The conscience of a killer will literally haunt him until he dies. Further, to give help to a criminal who has not been judged for his crime is a mistake. Mistake. It is regular that we see people coming through my office who have gotten in trouble with the law because they have aided criminals and hid them from the law, only to be caught and only to be charged with aiding and abetting a criminal. And of course, what do they want in my office? Because they have nothing, they expect that I can hand over to them a wonderful, high-powered attorney who will do their defense for nothing. Don't aid them. It's a mistake. There we go. Verse 18. He who walks blamelessly will be delivered, but he who is crooked will fall all at once. Now, the original in this actually implies something different from what we read here. It implies that he who walks blamelessly will rise with many resources, but he who is crooked will fall for a lack of resources. In other words, if you are a righteous person and you walk blamelessly, the resources will come to you. Oh, they may come slow, and you have to make a choice of how to handle them and how to protect them and how to cherish them. But they will build and they will come to you. But if you're a wicked or crooked person, you will fall because you will have a lack of resources. So with that correction, that really makes that passage much clearer. Verse number 19. He who tills his land will have plenty of food, but he who follows empty pursuits will have poverty in plenty. Actually, this is the same thought. This is over in Proverbs chapter 12 and 11. From time to time, the ousting from the Garden of Eden until the Industrial Revolution, the two chief occupations of the world were farming and were herding. Those two occupations were the most important things. Both required hard work. Both represented a hard life. They epitomized honest labor, but can return a bountiful blessing also. Well, one of the secrets of each year's success for the farmer begins with the tilling of the land. The old dried crop must be turned over to rot. Later, it must be turned over again. It must be turned over until it's totally decayed. And the farmer walks out there, as Kay's grandfather took me out one day, and he grabbed that old black dirt up in Ellis County, and he held it in his hand, smelt it, and ran his hand around it. He said, "Yeah, it's time to plant. It's ready. It's ready." Every year the process repeats. Every year. Every year the farmer has bread on his table because he's done what is right. If you don't, if you go out and follow your own pursuits like the prodigal son, if you go follow those pursuits, only poverty comes to you. You'll end up eating the husk that even the swine would not even eat. And you'll realize that you should go back to where you were. Because at least there was food on the table. Verse 20, a faithful man will abound with blessings, but he who makes haste to be rich will not go unpunished. Proverbs 13:11 says, wealth obtained by fraud dwindles, but the one who gathers by labor increases it. In this life, most people rise financially to a level of wages or wage earning that they will basically hold steady for the rest of their life until they retire. In many cases, a teacher will go in and she's got a bachelor's and that's all she's got. Over the rest of her career, she may go up $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 every year, but that's about it. It doesn't even keep up with the cost increases. That's about what it is. Most people are able to obtain when a job is lost, a person like that, they're able to obtain another job, but they're going to go back in at about the same salary. It's just amazing to me how people move from job to job to job, but they get jobs that are about the same salary all the time to what they have attained to. However, these people, there are a few people in this world who become millionaires. And it's kind of interesting how they can actually go bankrupt and go broke, and the next thing you know, they're back up to being a millionaire because they know how to do those things. They've got that training, okay? They recover their millionaire status. In fact, there was one guy that I friends of, there's a member of the church here, who he was penniless. His father gave him some money to begin with. He turned that money into a huge nest egg, much bigger than what his father gave him. He lost it all, was penniless, came back and made more money than ever done before, and then became penniless again, and then did it again. And just the time that I knew him, he was a multimillionaire three times, and he was penniless three times. And when he died, he had about half of the money that he had built it back up about half when he finally died. Now, this is not the case. If you've stolen $1 million or you've stolen $100,000, and you use that money, you don't know how to get that money back because you stole it. You stole it. You didn't earn it, so you don't know how to do that. Well, therefore, anyone who steals stolen funds, they cannot replace it, and they're going to be poor, back in poverty again. And the only way they can replace it, because the only thing they know how to do, is to steal. Verse number 21. To show partiality is not good, because for a piece of bread, a man will transgress. To show partiality. In other words, almost every, not an absolute statement, but almost everybody has a price that they will be bribed for. A wise person understands that you cannot show partiality to one person over another, and that's never, ever any good. A bribe can override the facts. A bribe can override the evidence. Even though if the evidence and the facts tell the tale, a bribe can change the direction of a decision, and a person can be influenced by a payoff. Never be influenced by a payoff. Never, ever. Verse 22. A man with an evil eye hastens after wealth and does not know that want will come upon him. This verse is talking about a stingy man. Although there are a few people who are wealthy because of their stinginess, most stingy people continue to lust after wealth, and yet they end up in poverty. Stinginess across the board in general will always lead to poverty. Verse 23, he who rebukes a man will afterward find more favor than he who flatters with the tongue. Truth is truth is truth is truth is truth in all situations. Truth sometimes hurts. But in the long run, when you have told a man something truthful, they will come back to you and reward you and say, you were right and I was wrong. Another man in our church many, many years ago was having an issue. It was a court issue with another person. I told him what was going to happen if he continued to do what he was doing. I warned him, I warned him, I warned him, I warned him, I warned him. And he threatened me. He threatened to sue me. He called on my phone and threatened to kill me. My wife was scared to death. We locked everything down. We were very, very careful. We gave him a no trespass warning. And lo and behold, about 2.5 years after the no trespass warning, he walks in my office, comes right on the property, walks right through past the secretaries, opens the door, walks into my office. Nobody was in there, fortunately. And he sits down the chair right beside my office, and he says, I owe you an apology. You warned me, you warned me, you warned me, and I did not listen to you, and you were right on every single fact. Truth is truth is truth is truth. But what you have to be careful with, and that comes back to you. People who know you're telling the truth will come back. But the person who just flatters you to, you know, let you feel good about yourself, that never comes back. Do you know anybody who every word that comes out of their mouth is some sort of flattery? When I get around people who every word's some sort of flattery, I keep thinking, what do they want? What do they want? What do they want something. They think I have something to give them. They don't know that the Lord is in control of everything I have to give. And the Lord knows what's coming through that door before they come through that door. And if the Lord already knows they're coming through that door and I end up with a dry Sunday where I have nothing to give away and they show up the next day, the Lord is in control. And I look at them and I say, I am so sorry. I cannot write something out of my part of the checkbook if I do not have it. I cannot go into the red. That would not be good management. And I have nothing because no resources came this past Sunday from the tithes and offerings of the people who give to my ministry. And it is so amazing. I always say to them, I will put you on the list. And if something happens next Sunday, I will call you back. Usually nothing happens the next Sunday. I will call them the next week. I will cut them loose. And I will say, I am so sorry. I can't because nothing has come in. And then Wednesday night, the floodgates will open up. Floodgates on Wednesday night. And the money will roll in because the wicked have been taken care of that the Lord already knew was coming. He always provides. It's been a foundational principle since the third year of my ministry of Helping Hands. Did you notice I was a slow learner? I didn't say the first year, not the second. And it was actually at the end of the second year. And things like what happens now at Christmas time and holiday time and stuff like that, where the requests start rolling in. I'm always amazed how when we let God make the provisions, when my God shall supply all your need according to His riches and glory, if you have a need and He wants it supplied, and He wants it supplied through Sagemont Church and the Helping Hands Ministry, it will come in. And if it's not in, it's not my responsibility to go try to buy it or get it. It's not my responsibility to go home at night worried about how I'm going to get it because I don't have any resources. It's my job just to dispense and to manage what the Lord has given me. By the way, put that practice in all of your life too. What you have that comes in your paycheck is what you must manage. The better you manage it, in God's way of managing it and not running red in a checkbook, not charging up on credit cards that you cannot pay or anything like that, God will then bless you and He will give you more to take care of. And you have to worry about that because there does come a time when God has blessed you so much that it is a full-time activity just taking care of God's stuff that He gave you. Verse 24. He who robs his father or his mother and says, it's not a transgression, is the companion of a man who destroys. Now, a son and a daughter who were robbed from his parents, they'll do that for many reasons. In fact, many in this room have told me stories about how their kids have taken things. Some man or something is a companion of that son that causes him. It can be another human. It can be something like drugs. Something is becoming a companion. And if you don't believe drugs or alcohol can be a companion that is more influential than another human, back up and look. In fact, drugs and alcohol can be a stronger companion and a more influence on a kid's life, as well as other things too, than anybody could ever tell, any human could ever tell him. And although they think, well, it's mine anyway because I'm going to inherit it, it's not theirs yet. It doesn't belong to them yet. It will not belong to them until the death and a passing on as an inheritance, or it is gifted from the parents. And when a child steals from his parents to go get money or something for something, there's usually something big going on that is wrong in their life. Verse 25, an arrogant man stirs up strife, but he who trusts in the Lord will prosper. Now, the word arrogant means selfishness, selfish man here. He's a person who his selfishness will strive will bring strife to all the relationships and will bring distrust and things that do not come easy to the arrogant man, but to the one who trusts the Lord, they do come easy, and blessings will pour out. You don't want to be a selfish person. You want to be a righteous person. Verse number 26. He who trusts in his heart is a fool, but he who walks wisely will be delivered. Well, Solomon here uses the word fool in the first part of this passage. And he says he's a fool in his own heart. Well, Solomon is obviously saying that a fool trusts in the desires of his own heart. That means he is not trusting in the desires of the Lord. He's trusting in what he wants and not what the Lord wants. So we must understand, we must trust in the Lord who will give deliverance. Because if we trust in ourselves, that will lead a person far away from the Lord. Verse number 27. He who gives to the poor will never want, but he who shuts his eyes will have many curses. The beginning of this thought is also found over in Proverbs 19:17. where he says, "He who is gracious to a poor man lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for his good deeds." Now, as a general rule, poor people are poor because poor people do what poor people do, no matter how much money they earn in a lifetime. In other words, poor people will remain poor because of how they use and how they waste the resources that come to them. And it all comes from the Lord, by the way, whether you're wicked or whether you're righteous. The resources come from the Lord. There are very few poor people in this world who are not poor because they have taken care of business. If they've taken care of business, they're not going to be poor. They're poor because they haven't taken care of business. So nevertheless, there are a few poor people in this world who neither waste what comes to them nor they ask for any help in any situation. There are a few poor people who just don't ask, and they take care of business. We see these people, they stumble and are gracious to them. When we see them, they see them stumble, we should be gracious to them. We should help them get along in life. We should make their road a little easier to travel. We will always be blessed by the Lord when we do that. Let's turn the page. Number 28. In our last verse for this chapter. When the wicked rise, men hide themselves. But when they perish, the righteous increase. This verse is actually a direct opposite of what was said back in chapter 28, verse 12, that said, "But when the wicked rise, men hide themselves." In many ways, the last part of this proverb is like the first part of 28:12 that says, "When the righteous triumph, there is great glory." Obviously, one of the greatest glories that comes from the perishing of the wicked is the increasing of righteousness that will happen. When the wicked are defeated by the righteous, people jump on the righteous bandwagon. When thieves are gone, the righteous people rejoice. Righteousness thrives because the righteous do not have to hide themselves from the wicked any longer. But when wickedness thrives, even the righteous people will have to hide and protect themselves. We are actually living in a time right now in 2015 when righteous people don't know what to do to protect ourselves, have not banded together to protect ourselves, and are actually in many ways hiding from the radicalism that is bringing great fear to our lives. We're living through it. Solomon's Proverbs were right. Lord Jesus, we thank you for this time just to study your word. May that be a blessing to us, and may we learn from them, and may we adjust our thinking to be righteous in your eyes. In your name, amen and amen.